We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of New Orleans Football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're here at their location on Airline Highway. Great spot, new location, great service, great coffee, great everything. Make sure you come by and check out this one. And if you need a new car, make sure you hit up my guy, Matt Bowers, best car dealer in the whole entire world. We're going to get into a lot of topics today, but most of them are going to be centered on the salary cap. The Saints have started their annual purge, and we're going to break down all the stuff they go through, how they get under the cap, some of the myths surrounding it, some of the conversations surrounding it. So we're going to get into all that and a whole lot more right after this ad break.
The New Orleans Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. They have a beautiful engagement salon there. So if you need to get a ring, make sure you go and check them out. They can be your jeweler basically for life, and that's a good place to start with them. And while you're there, make sure you check out their Florida Lee earring and necklace. They are specially priced for our NOF audience. All right. So it's cap day. Yeah, it is. It is. And they've started to make their moves. They restructured Derek Carr. They did Eric McCoy. There's going to be a bunch more. The cap got set at $255 million for the upcoming season, which is about $13 million more than a lot of people thought. So the Saints right now sitting on it, roughly about $40 million left to clear. That's really light work for them in the way they manage their cap. But yeah, this is an annual tradition. They restructure a bunch of contracts. You know, they always got to clear about $100 million to get their spending room too, and it's always something that they're able to do. And then every year there's a bunch of fans and analysts, and everybody freaks out about how it's over. They're going to have to cut this guy and that guy, and they never actually have to do that. So there's some hard truths to these critiques, but there's also a lot of misperceptions. I don't think either one of us love how they do it. I don't think either one of us hate how they do it. It's just kind of how they do it, and we've come to understand it kind of covering it the last decade, couple decades. But yeah, it's never as bad as people actually think.
Well, yeah, and the biggest misconception, again, like you said, we don't necessarily love it. We don't necessarily hate it. We understand it, though. You have to understand it if you cover the Saints. We've learned about it. We've educated ourselves on it. doesn't mean it's the right way to do things, but the misconceptions we see all the time are that there's going to be a bill come due for this, that they're mortgaging their future, that they're that this like snowballs like credit card debt. And sure enough, the moment we send out the very first one of these that we expected, that we could have written back in September of last year was going to happen, Eric McCoy, Derek Carr, those are the tweets that explain, oh no, I can't believe they're doing this. Now it's over. Now their future is ruined. But I went through some of these tweets and we put some of them up here. And so those are the first ones I want to address because they're not just coming from the fans. Credit card, put it on the credit card, worry about it later. And then what was the next one on here? They're going to transition from recession to depression. What people don't understand is the Saints have set this up so that it's just consistent every year. It's completely consistent every year. We had Field Yates on last year who covers the front offices for the NFL from ESPN, and he said that is the key to the Saints making this work is it's kind of like the teams that go for two. As long as you are consistent with what you do, it's fine. And so we put this graphic together, and I think this is the best way to explain it, is there is no interest payments. There is no penalties. It is if you sign a player to a five-year, $55 million deal, you then have to put all $55 million of those dollars on your cap. Total. You look at the bottom. Let's start at the bottom of these two charts. To the left, a total of $55 million. To the right, a total of $55 million. If you wanted to do it, hey, let's charge $11 million against our cap every year. Year one, year two, year three, year four, year five. It's $11 million each year. It's a total of $55 million. Well, the way the Saints do it with someone like Derek Carr's contract, it's $3 million this year, then $5 million, then $7 million, then $9 million, then $11 million. And then, yeah, when that guy gets cut, there's a $20 million debt charge. And everyone thinks, oh, you've handcuffed yourself. You've ruined everything. Now you can't field a team. Smart NFL analysts are saying that about the team right now. They're saying they can't compete because they have things like $20 million dead money charges. But look at every other year on this list. In year one, they had $8 million in bonus space. In year two, they had $6 million in bonus space. In year three, they had $4 million in bonus space to compete with. So it's just choosing column B instead of column A. They both add up to $55 million. One gives you more money to play with in years one, two, three, four, five. The other one gives you less money to play with in year six. But as long as you do that on a rotating basis, which the Saints have, the amount of cash you're actually spending on players is the same as any other team in the league. So it's just the misconception that they will eventually pay for this. Because in year six, when there's a $20 million dead charge on someone like, let's say it's Cam Jordan getting cut, then they can have a $30 million quarterback like Derek Carr, whose cap number is $12.7 million this year. You save it there. You know, maybe it'd be nice to do it. Maybe it's cleaner books if you do it in column A. But column B is not worse, is kind of the point that we...
Yeah, because, like, see, here's the thing. Like, when you hit that $20 million in dead money, when you look at it, that... It isn't 11 across the board. It isn't even... They aren't running a flat cap. When they're at 20 at one point, someone else has the three now, and they're at the start of that journey. So it's kind of looking at it like, all right, they have X amount of money, and how do they divvy it up? And it's everybody just looks at it is a set piece, and it's not like this is Cam Jordan's piece of the pizza, this is DeMario Davis's piece of the pizza, this is Alvin's piece of the pizza. It's just this is the pizza, and we're going to cut it up however we need, and everything's going to get served.
They're almost looking at the dollar amounts more than the players' names, too. Like they're looking at the dollar amounts. Which dollar amount can I fiddle with, and which one can't I fiddle with? It doesn't affect what they decide to do with players. And I think that's another big misconception. And I didn't find this in these tweets, but I definitely saw someone talking about just the other day that the biggest problem with the Saints cap is it's stopping them from cutting players who need to be cut. That is not true. If they don't want to pay, if there's a player on this team, we're going to talk about these guys later. If they don't want to pay Marcus May $7.5 million this year, if they don't want to pay Tyrann Mathieu $9 million, if they don't want to pay Alvin Kamara $12 million, they will cut them and they will let that dead money hit their books. They exactly do the opposite of what that person suggested. They don't let dead money scare them out of football decisions. They will cut someone if they don't want to pay them new money. There is cash decisions and football decisions, and then there is cap management. They're two separate things. You can put that graphic back up, though. This is a fair thing, though. Eric Ordonez said, please stop kicking the can and just start over. The Saints are no longer a player or two away. Without the ability to sign any free agents of need, there is no chance for this team to compete. Start over. This is a fair conversation to have if you really have no chance to compete. Like, we were talking off air. If you were the Carolina Panthers last year and you were rebuilding with Bryce Young and you gutted your roster, yeah, that might be a good time to be like, hey, let's also catch them on the salary cap. And look, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did that last year, and they ended up winning the division anyway. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers went from 40 – they were $58 million over the cap last year, and they said, we're going to catch up on this. Maybe we win, maybe we don't. And now they're $45 million under the cap. So you can do that in 1 year, which makes this less scary. And if you ever decide, yeah, my team is really out of it, sure, go ahead and catch up on the cap then. But – the Saints have just never decided that their team is really out of it. And I don't completely disagree with them. Yeah, I think they're kind of like a 9-10 win team right now. But I don't think that's the time when you just give up and say, we're going to stop trying, when you're at the 9 or 10 win team level. If they ever get to the 3-win level and they're drafting a quarterback with the number one overall pick, then I would maybe catch up on the cap then.
Yeah. The hard truth here is that 9-win teams don't start over. Like, I know everyone hates the Saints right now, and they hate Dennis Allen, and they hate everything they're doing, and they hate the way they build it, and they hate. But, like, they went from 7 wins to 9 wins. That isn't usually when you say, let's blow it up and start over. That's when usually most people are saying, let's try to get a little bit further. Now, we all agree optically, like, the 9 wins wasn't great. We don't like the way it came together. The season felt like they limped to 9 instead of sprinted to 9, all that stuff. But if you were a person that's building this team, you're probably looking at it and you're probably a little bit calmer than everyone else, and you say, okay, we improved. So, like, how do we keep improving? That's not when you start over and say we're tearing this thing down. And, again, I don't think this is a Super Bowl team or anything like that, but I just don't think that's the time. If somebody else did that, I'd be like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this right now?
Why are you purposely
taking
yourselves out of it?
Yeah, like, is this the producers? Like, what are you doing right now? Like, are you tanking on purpose? Like, it just doesn't – it wouldn't make sense to me. So, yeah, I just don't think that's the time when people start over. The other thing that I don't – look, I mean, the way everybody talks about it that drives me nuts, though, is that they talk about it as if it is a flat cap, and it's just like you have to look at it like they are doing things differently. And I don't know how many years in a row they have to do this before people realize that, hey, like, if you do restructure somebody, that just means that somebody else has a big number and now somebody else has a smaller number. Yeah. And it's not – it's
people
limiting in the way.
People criticize them when they see the big number. So we saw somebody criticizing Taysom Hill's big number this year. It was like $16 million, and they're actually going to restructure his, so it'll be lower. But they never give the Saints credit. This bears repeating. They just restructured Derek Carr's number today. So Derek Carr's cap number this year is going to be $12.7 million. They're going to give him $30 million in cash to play football. He's a $30 million a year player, and his cap number is 12.7. So that's the benefit of doing this. They all look at the downside. Like, yeah, but 1 year there's going to be $20 million of dead money. Okay, but this year he's a $30 million player who is only costing $12 million against the cap. That is an $18 million benefit. You get the benefit this year, you get the penalty later. It's kind of silly that they did it that way, but it started back in 2011 when they should have won the Super Bowl. It hit a little harder in COVID when they lost money. So, yeah, maybe one day they can reset, but they're not being hurt by doing this. This is their way to delay resetting forever, and it doesn't cost them. There's no do we have this graphic about what the last 4 years have looked like? 4 years in a row. So each one of these years, people thought, oh no, now it's over. So 2021, they were $100 million over the cap. That's a big number because of COVID. The cap went down. They mess around. Then they started 22, $75 million over the cap. Even more manageable. Then they started 2023, only $55 million over the cap, even more manageable. And they signed Derek Carr to the richest contract. It didn't stop them from signing a quarterback to a $100 million deal. Now they're starting about $73 million over the cap. But I think people assume that a chart like this that we're looking at would be 100 in 2021, and then 120 in 2022, and then 140 in 2023, like they can never get out from under it. It's going down every year because the cap goes up every year. They know what they're doing, and they have a plan for it, and that's the most important thing to stress.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is if you have an owner that's willing to write the checks to, like, They're topping the league almost every year in cash spending, top five almost every single year. And if I was a fan, I would be pissed if the team I cheered for wasn't, because I want the owner spending all the money.
I just looked at the Titans having $78 million in cap space this year. What for?
Yeah.
Why are you wasting Derrick Henry's career with all that cap space? What are you saving it for?
Especially when you're in a situation where they really don't have to pay for their facilities on Airline Drive or in the city. They get their tower. Like, I want them spending the money on the field because, like, where else is it going then? So they should be doing this. They should be being competitive. They should be doing all that. And I think the other side of this, too, is if you kind of need to stay competitive in this market, because if you ever get too far back, I think, A, like, we see how quickly the fans are going to turn on them. B, I think it becomes very hard to get talent here then at that point if things bottom out. And, you know, C, I think it's just – the best business strategy. Like, they have to keep selling tickets. They have to keep filling that building. They have a lease that's coming, you know, an agreement that's at the end of its legs. Like, you want to be in a position of power when all this stuff is coming to a head. Like, there are a lot of things here where I think it's just business savvy to make sure that you are maintaining a path where you are a competitive team and you have a product that people want to pay for and patronize, and you maintain your cachet in the community and all that. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff extending beyond football that's very important for them to make sure they stay in this place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could also view that as a negative if you think they're making football decisions for other reasons. But
I don't think
either way, it all boils down to they want to win and they want to be competitive, and that's a noble goal.
I'm not saying that at all. I think it's incredibly stupid to ever just tear it down to the studs. It's very unwatchable. It's impossible to get back. But I mean, I think it's important on a lot of levels, though. Like, I just think that there's a lot of things here that are at play. But, yeah, I don't think they make football decisions based on other things. But I'm saying, if you are the owner of this team, I think your motivation for, like, writing these checks and making sure, like, it is part of the business strategy, I think. Like, so you have other owners that I think probably want to protect their bottom line a little bit, and they're more worried about their cap and keeping it at a certain place because they don't have the cash flow. Like, I think they have cash flow, and I think the motivation for spending the cash is multifaceted. I think
they spend as much cash as anyone. They always have. Yeah.
I don't think anyone's saying make this decision because this business thing. No, the football stuff's the football stuff. But I think playing hand in hand, like, if you're like, well, why is the owner doing this? It's because it is. I think it's just important for them to maintain the product. Like, I don't think this is a market where you can bottom out and it's New York and you have all these people that, you know, well, hey, I'll go check out a Jets game. Like, there is a limited number. And if you disenfranchise everybody, I think it becomes a thing that affects a lot of different things flowing off of that.
Do we have the rest of these tweets to react to? There are a couple downsides. I mean, we are not trying to completely defend the Saints' method of cap use. There's definitely downsides. So we address this one, and then what's the next one? How much money are Saints players getting out of this compared to other teams? I thought this was a good question. Are the players getting more with these yearly contracts than they would? So the answer is no, they are not getting any more. Derek Carr was going to get $30 million this year. Derek Carr's still getting $30 million. Eric McCoy is going to get the exact same amount. Cam Jordan is due $13 million this year. When you hear about Cam Jordan's restructure, he's still going to get $13 million. The benefit for the players is they often get these in the form of a signing bonus instead of weekly game checks. Sometimes they get paid out in weekly game checks either way. It becomes guaranteed when they turn it into a signing bonus. But, no, the amount they're paying on the players stays the same either way. So that is neither a benefit nor a negative of this. Was that the last one that we had, or do we have any more tweets? Until the Saints fix this crap, it'll forever be a problem. So that's another one that's the same kind of thing we've been talking about. But there was definitely a question about, and I think this is maybe one of the potential negatives. So you take someone like Cam Jordan. Let's say he's going into the last year of his contract in 2025. He's almost 35 years old. He'll be 35 years old this summer. Right now he has a cap hit of $23.3 million. Next year it's supposed to be $17.7 million. Year after that, he's supposed to have $10 million in dead money. When they redo him, he'll go from $23.3 million to $14 million this year. They're going to save $9.4 million. They're going to add that $9.4 million to the future years. So now when they cut him in 2026, or if he retires, if that's the last year of his contract, it's now $17.5 million in dead money. Do you think that should influence decisions at all? I know that is a very popular one. That, let's say we know for sure Cam Jordan is not going to play in 2026. We don't know that for sure, but do you not touch his contract now because you don't want to have $17.5 million in dead money in 2026 instead of $10.5 million in dead money? Should that influence a decision like this?
That's where I start to have trouble with some of their stuff. I know they often just don't care. Yeah. It's just like, we're going to let this guy go. Like, we signed Junior Gallette to this thing, and we're going to get rid of him. We just signed Jimmy Graham. We're going to get rid of him. Like, they do things like that and don't care. There's really no regard for it. And I've had conversations with people, you know, just, and they're like, it's just that money. It's like, all right. Like, I tend to look at it in a way where it's like, well, if you cut him and then you got to replace him, like, I kind of try to look at it as like a whole price. Like, all right, if I cut this guy and then I replace him with this guy, is it better or is it worse? And then what's the cost of that, the total cost of the replacement? Yeah. And that's where I tend to get my head screwed up on it. And it's sometimes hard for me to understand fully how they look at it. But I know the way they look at it is just whatever. Like, we're going to get rid of him if it doesn't work. And then we'll figure out another way around it. And you got to pay the money at some point anyhow. So we'll just push different money ahead. And that's just the kind of thing, is that people don't look at it like it's elastic at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think sometimes I'm a little bit more like, and I think that's just me being like, this is reckless. Like,
yeah,
there's a point of recklessness to me in my mind when I look at it. But when people look at it, they just think it's like such a rigid thing, and it's not. Yeah. Like, you can move all these pieces around. So they just kind of just rearrange it. We're going to shrink over here, expand over here, but like, we're going to get everything in the box still. And they found a way to do it. You know, there are some limitations to it. And I think when you do have like a ton of dead money on your book for things that aren't useful, I mean, there is a point where that number hits where I'm like, this is nuts. And it's been a few times where, like, I thought like the two I just said, I thought Jimmy and Junior were super hugely reckless. And those are the kind of moves that I think set you back. Like, when you're bailing on a contract that early and you're taking on like a massive number instead of just like 10 million, when it's like 40 million dead for a guy, it's like, that was stupid. Like, and you know, I think they would probably say the same thing about both those decisions, that they both just didn't work out the way they wanted to. But,
well, it's to further your point. Okay. So the reason it's reckless when the person doesn't live out the expected life of the contract because of the signing bonus.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone like Jimmy Graham, I don't know what his signing bonus was right off the top of my head, but they signed him to a 4-year, $40 million
deal. Yeah, they were a year into it, yeah.
And if you sign a player to that and you give him like a $15 million signing bonus or something like that, and you trade him 1 year later, well, now you gave him a 1-year, $16 million deal. It was supposed to even out over the life of the contract and average out to $10 million a year or whatever. You paid it all up front and then traded him away. That's when you pay someone top heavy. But if somebody lasts the life of the contract, then then it's a little different. So you're right. What's reckless is giving up on someone really early into a big contract.
It's just misevaluation too.
Misevaluation. Yeah. But one thing is a misnomer about dead money, I think, is with a signing bonus. The original signing bonus that you give a guy, last year they gave Derek Carr like a $30 million signing bonus. I think it was like $28.5 million. As soon, like, technically that becomes dead money the moment you sign it. The player gets a $28.5 million check. But you could choose to say, all right, and put it all on our books right now, all $28.5 million. No team in the NFL does that. Every team in the NFL takes a signing bonus and divides it over 5 years. That is already dead money. If you decide to move it from 2024 to 2025 to 2030 to 2035, it's always dead money from the day they sign their signing bonus. The moving it back to another year is just saying, hey, can we pay that later? So if they cut Cam Jordan later, they're just saying, I mean, they could have $23 million charged against their cap this year for him, or they could say, hey, can we pay $9 million of that off later? Can you count $9 million for that later? That's all they're doing. They're not adding to the total. They're not increasing it. They're just saying, can we pay it later instead of now? And so that's why I don't think they – I think they just have like a dead money bucket, and I don't think they attach names to it. Once it's on the – I know I'm not helping anybody by confusing it this much, but I just think people think dead money only counts if the player is like cut. That's when we call it dead money. But as soon as they sign a signing bonus, it becomes this like cap charge that they're going to have to deal with sometime. But they can also delay if they want to.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
I mean,
that probably didn't help much. But
I think the other place where they kind of get themselves in trouble too, and like this is recently, is sort of like when you're looking at it and it might be like, well, this backup quarterback might be a better fit for the system than Jameis. But if we let Jameis go, it's going to cost this much. So like now I think there are points where you start backing yourself into situations where it's like, well, if we keep him, then it's this. And, you know, I think those are some of the decisions. So it does hamstring them a little bit. But I just don't think it's I don't think it's nearly as bad as people make it out to be.
I don't know that we've seen a history of them making football decisions based on that, though. I'd be critical of them if they did. But, yeah, I mean, potentially Jameis last year was a decision where they're like, well, it's more cap-friendly to keep him as our backup. Do you have a lot, though, that's come to mind that
they
kept players
when they
shouldn't
have? Well, I mean,
I don't know
if they would jump out, but, I mean, I think the Cam extension's one. That was kind of, you know, you're looking at it and you're like, wow. Like, you know, it immediately it kind of backfires a little bit. And I think there's probably going to be some more of those. I thought Sean, I don't know if it was cap decisions or what, but, like, there are a few times where he did things where it felt like this is a little sentimental. You're keeping this guy too long. And there probably is a financial aspect to that as well. But I think there's a handful of them probably where – it becomes harder to make a shrewd decision when you do have these big numbers tied to people. And it's not like, well, we're going to be early on this so that we get out of it so we don't get caught. Like, they don't have those types of options, where I think other teams do, where they're like, okay, we're going to cut this guy so we don't get caught up into a bad situation. And, yeah, we might be a year early, but, you know, when you're doing it like this, you're kind of riding it until the point of expiration, and then you kind of make your decision where it's like, all right, we can't do this anymore. It doesn't make sense. So, I mean, I think just when you're looking at it in ways that you kind of get, you know, tied up a little bit. If you're running a flat, clean cap and all the guaranteed money's in the first 2 years and it's never in the back 3 years, as soon as someone's not worth it or, you know, there's someone a little bit cheaper, you can just jump off the boat a little bit sooner and a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some football decisions would transcend that. I mean, we're seeing it with Russell Wilson in Denver right now. What's their cap hit going to be? Like some astronomical $63 million in dead money, but they've decided they want to move on to him, so they're going to eat that. We might have to see it with the Saints. If they trade Marshawn Lattimore, I think he'll have a dead money charge of something like $18 million that they'll have to figure out how to make room for. That could be an incentive to not trade the guy. But if they want to trade him, they're going to do it anyway, and they're going to figure out how to absorb that money, because it'd be $18 million they'd have to put on their books this year, and then they wouldn't have to worry about his contract ever again. They'll make up for it with someone else's contract. That's how they go back and forth. But yeah, if it affects football decisions, then it definitely becomes the wrong way to do your bookkeeping. There's no doubt about it. I just don't think we've seen a ton of that. Look, Trey Hendrickson, everyone will point to. We did an episode last week where we said which players have they lost in free agency that really cost them. And we had Teron Armstead, Trey Hendrickson, Marcus Williams, and then it started getting a little thinner after that. But as we said, we think those were pretty much all football decisions.
It's not, we don't think they were football decisions. Yeah. Like, we had conversations with people about Trey. They got it wrong. They got it wrong. They misevaluated it. And again, that's worse than having a cap situation dictate that. They got it wrong. And someone asked me the other day, they're like, hey, well, you guys have said that they chose Davenport over him. Like, they weren't choosing Trey no matter what. Like, if there was no Davenport, they weren't keeping Trey at the number he was going to be able to get. They did not believe it. Like, we had those conversations before it. We had those conversations during it. We had those conversations after it. Like, they know that they got that one wrong. And I don't know, sometimes that happens. And look, Trey had a great season, but, like, also being discarded by the team that drafted him might have gave him kind of his villain arc, where he's putting in the motivation to become a superstar too. So you just kind of never know. But yeah, I mean, he had a great season and they got it wrong. It happens. But yeah, I just don't think that there's been a lot of, like, I saw someone point out Teron today is like, oh, they didn't keep him. Well, you guys, like, jump on the team. It's so confusing to me, like, the way these conversations are, because they're like, oh, well, they keep guys past their point of productivity and the expiration date, and that's how they get in these bad situations. And then when they move on from someone and they don't put themselves in that situation and they take the dead money hit, now it's a bad thing.
That was
and
the one.
It's just like he's been injured the last couple of years too. Like, no disrespect to him. Like, it's just like that wasn't a guy that I think this team.
Well, they would have had to invest. I mean, to get him, the Dolphins had to give him a 5-year, $75 million deal with the first 3 years guaranteed. So, like, $60 million guaranteed or something like that. And they, like, everyone loves Teron Armstead around here, but they didn't think that was a smart football decision. Even if they knew how to hide the money and manipulate the money, they didn't think that was a like, wise investment.
Let's say, like, they hadn't re-signed Cam. Like, if Cam had left and, you know, had the season he just had and he goes somewhere next year and he gets 7 sacks or something, like, they would all be like, oh, look, they
the
lost this guy. Yeah,
lose that guy.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, aren't you saying that these are the – guys are getting close to the end of their career and you should let them go so you aren't paying them? Like,
I mean, that's just the whole point of this conversation, if you wanted to bottle it down to one thing, is the cap has never stopped them from doing anything. I actually, when people would always say, look at the players they didn't re-sign, I'm like, they got into this quote-unquote mess by re-signing all their players. They made Cam Jordan one of the highest paid defensive ends of all time. They made Teron Armstead the highest paid left tackle of all time. They made Drew Brees the highest paid quarterback of all time. They made Michael Thomas the highest paid receiver of all time. They made Marshawn Lattimore one of the highest paid cornerbacks of all time. They franchise tagged Marcus Williams. They re-signed all of their Pro Bowlers, and that's why they got into this cap mess. So they do re-sign their players. Like, all the people arguing that they should have been more frugal with their cap space were arguing that, okay, which two of those three players should they have not re-signed so that they could have reset their cap back then? The big problem was they had a lot of good players to invest in, and the unfortunate news right now is they have less young players that are going to that are going to cost $20 million a year to re-sign right now. Ryan Ramczyk, I forgot to mention him. They re-signed him for $100 million. They made him the highest paid right tackle of all time. So they re-signed a whole bunch of guys.
The only thing this really comes down to is it worth it? Should you be doing this with Derek Carr as your quarterback? You just won nine games. Are you taking away from possibly acquiring better assets by hanging on to the assets you have? That's the question. It's not whether it works or whether it doesn't, and that's the only conversation people should be having. The idea that they're gonna have to cut everybody or this is finally catching up to them, like, that's wrong. They can literally outrun this forever if they want to, and if you're saying that's wrong, just really think about it, because they've been doing it for a while and it took COVID to make it stop, so they can. All right, let's move on to the next one. The whole discussion that we're having right now really could be the money segment, but let's get into one specific offshoot here for the money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Forget about accounting. One other method to save cap space is the good old-fashioned demanding a pay cut or releasing a player if they're due to make too much money. Who on this year's roster do we think is a possible candidate for release or pay cut? We got Ryan Ramczyk at $17 million, DeMario Davis $12 million, Alvin's making $11.8 million, Taysom's at $10 million, Tyrann Mathieu's at $9 million, Marcus Mays at $7.5 million, James Hurst is at $4.75 million. Anyone there that kind of jumps out to you as a candidate?
I think there's some real candidates on this list. Look, this is something this is where the real decisions come in. It's not about their cap number. It's about, do we want to put this new number on our books in 2024? Last year, they asked Andrus Peat to take a pay cut. They asked Jameis Winston to take a pay cut. Ramczyk stands out for sure because this is all about the medical evaluation. He's been talking with doctors. He's been talking about what his treatment plan, what his outlook is. If they feel good about that, I think he gets to keep his $17 million. I mean, I think they'd love to turn it into per-game injury incentives. I don't know if they're going to make those demands, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it. We talked about Marcus May the other night. Because of his recent injury history, 7.5 really stands out there. James Hurst is right on the border, but some of that salary he made because he earned an escalator last year based on playing time, so they wouldn't save that anyway. I think he's okay. So I think May stands out the most. Alvin and Taysom, are they having those conversations? I just don't think they would cut those guys if they refused to take pay cuts, but I think they wish they were probably paying those two guys less.
I think I don't think Alvin would take one. I mean, he's kind of at the point where he's probably looking for an extension. Yeah. Like, there's no reason. He's effectively in the last year of his deal. The last year of that contract, he's definitely not going to see it. That was just a number put on there to inflate the average annual value so you could say that he was, you know, paid X amount. Was it the highest running back contract in the league at the time?
No, but it put it in line. Like, it was second or third, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that wasn't a real number. He's not going to see that. So, you know, I think every Ramczyk definitely is one. I think I don't know how you approach DeMario, even if you wanted to, and I don't think he should take one. So I'm moving on from him on this list. I'm keeping him on the team. I mean, I'm moving on from that conversation. Taysom is somebody that I think has to take a pay cut. I would try to demand it. Like, even if you're giving him an extension, but you're lowering that number, whatever you got to do, that's you can't pay him $10 million. Like, I can't do it. Like, I don't see the value there. And then, you know, everybody else I think I could go either way with. But, yeah, I mean, Taysom and Ramczyk just jump out to me as guys that I think kind of need to lower that number.
I mean, definitely. So pay attention, because we're going to talk about if you read the graphic below, there's a bunch of names of guys whose salaries are already guaranteed. So if you're wondering, why aren't we talking about Jamal Williams? Why aren't we talking about Juwan Johnson? Why aren't we talking about Cam Jordan? Their salaries are guaranteed this year as part of recent extensions they signed. These are guys who have non-guaranteed salaries this year. They're the only ones who they would even consider getting a pay cut. So pay attention. Some people are going to talk about they restructured their contract. They converted salary into bonus. But every once in a while, there's a couple that are actual pay cuts. And there's a couple guys on this list that might actually – be forced to take a pay cut if they want to stay. And it's not out of the question that they could just flat out cut a player. They haven't done that in a while. But some of those names we talked about, if they're not going to get a pay cut, I mean, you said Taysom Hill. Would you consider cutting Taysom Hill if he declined to take a pay cut?
No, I don't think I'd cut him, but I mean, I think you got to find a way to make that happen, kind of. I mean, it's just a number that I think is untenable. It just doesn't make sense. You know, there's ways to get that done. You give a little more guaranteed money or something, and tell him, hey, like, you got to lower this a little bit, and you'll get an extra couple of years or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that I would keep an eye on for sure, though. But yeah, we're gonna get into a whole lot more right after this ad break. Got a bunch of stuff we're still talking about, some coaching changes. We got your Martin's question of the day, all that, and a whole lot more coming right up after this.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Welcome back to PJ's on Airline Highway. We are presented by PJ's Coffee. So if you need to get your day started, make sure you check them out every single day. They got the best coffee that you can get. All right, let's get into our next topic presented by Hardhide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey. We spent a lot of time talking about the Saints coaching staff this offseason, the offensive side of the bubble. We haven't really looked at the defensive staff too much because I think they kind of handled business last year, but it's funny coming back to this point last year, that was kind of the big question, was how are they going to handle this with getting rid of Ryan Nielsen and Chris Richard and moving on to, you know, different guys. Joe Woods came in, Marcus Robertson came in, Todd Grantham came in. How do we kind of feel like they handled that shift last year?
Good and bad. I think the secondary was really, really strong. I think Joe Woods turned out to be a really good hire. Dennis Allen was familiar with him. The critics of it were like, oh, he's just hiring his old friends who used to work for him. And it's like, sometimes that's a good idea. We're really excited about Clint Kubiak bringing in people who he's worked with before and who know how to run his system.
It's always a good idea, man.
Yeah.
It's never a bad idea. You need people that understand your system. Yeah.
Especially if you are running a system, like Dennis Allen runs a defense, and he's like, I need you to teach and install and implement this specific defense that I have a specific vision for. And Dennis Allen talked about the importance of that, how this defense didn't have a vision for a while, but he has a vision for it. He has the guys running it. Marcus Robertson coaching the secondary. Joe Woods coaching the secondary, also being the defensive coordinator. Dennis Allen calling the plays. Bringing in Todd Grantham on the defensive line, I haven't heard any critiques of him as a position coach. He's really respected in both the college and the NFL over the years, but I just think they had a general overall defensive line philosophy that didn't necessarily improve anything. I think they wanted to get a little faster, a little leaner, but a little more aggressive and attacking. I didn't see that they changed the personnel out almost completely outside of Cam Jordan and Carl Granderson. I didn't see that bear a lot of fruit in run defense or pass rush, but I'm not blaming
right players,
Todd Grantham
right?
for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a talent issue there more
yeah,
than.
Yeah.
So we'll see how, if they restock the cupboards and you aren't getting anything out of it, then you kind of start looking at that a little bit. But
and Brzee had a good rookie year. So, yeah.
That too. It's kind of funny how you look at it because, like, they bring in Keith Williams, a wide receiver coach, and then before everybody realizes that he worked with, like, Tyreek and Davante Adams, they're like, oh, Baltimore, like, no, they don't have good receivers. Like, they never put up good numbers. And it's just like, well, he might be a great coach, but they just – the system and then the people they have there, like, it all kind of plays into it. So, yeah, we got to kind of see Todd Grantham with talent to kind of – is he holding it back? I don't think he is. I think he's probably – I'll, you know, there's a lot of things to criticize DA for, like, coaching defense and knowing how to put together his staff is something that I'm just not going to criticize him for at this point. Like, he's had guys go on and have other jobs. His assistants get attention for, you know, other jobs around the league. One of his former assistants, Aaron Glenn, is probably going to be a head coach sooner than later. So I think that he kind of knows
what he's doing. Who we're not mentioning because he stayed at linebackers, I think, is a rising star, got defensive coordinator interviews, will probably be a defensive coordinator.
He took this big swing last year saying, hey, we need to get rid of these guys to make this better, and he made it better, and everybody thought he was wrong. So, but yeah, look, going to the earlier point about like hiring your friends or whatever, like if you have a coordinator – and he can't hire people he knows because you don't think you're going to work, then you got the wrong coordinator. Like, that's the problem. That, like, your system's broke and he isn't the right guy. But, you know, overall, I think they have a good – on paper, like, the coaching staff looks like it should be good. And I was, you know, looking at some of the other ones around the league, and I always – you know, I look at the Patriots because I used to cover the Patriots. Like, their staff looks – they're the team that looks like they got the last pick on everybody. They got a – they got a wide receivers coach who was a quality control assistant last year at the college level. He has a losing record as a high school coach. Like,
you did a deep dive.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just like, who is this guy? And I started looking him up, and it was nuts. I mean, so I think, you know, defensively they got the guys they want. Offensively, I think they got the guys they want. I think they've done a good job of putting together a coaching staff. Now, what does that mean? I mean, ultimately the players have to go out. They got to execute. Derek Carr's got to have a healthier, better season than he did a year ago. Everything's got to kind of come together. But as far as the people coaching him, it looks like – and again, Clint Kubiak might not be what we think he's going to be. Maybe that's a disappointment. But on paper, the theory of everything, it really fits a lot better than I ever expected it to kind of come together this offseason.
No, yeah, and you made the point. I mean, even more than hiring Joe Woods, even more than hiring Todd Grantham, even more than hiring Marcus Robertson, Ryan Nielsen, they had no choice. He was hired as the defensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, and when they fired their staff this year, he quickly got snatched up to become the defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But DA did make a somewhat controversial or surprising choice to move on from Chris Richard, who's a really decorated assistant, but he just felt like he had secondary coaches with a philosophy that was more aligned with him. And I think we – so that was the big choice he made. And I think we saw the secondary show improvement. And the secondary was the strength of the team last year.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, he gets positive rating for me for that move. Absolutely. Took a big swing and it hit. All right, time now for the first Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of handpicked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and so much more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. All right. First question, what would be the biggest surprise position drafted in the first round, or which position in the first round would be the biggest surprise to fans, but not you guys covering the team?
Well, look, there's a couple positions that are like cheat codes here. Like, I don't think they're going to draft a kicker and a punter, obviously. And I almost lump running back in there. Although Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs snuck into really high draft picks last year, I don't think anyone's talking about a running back that high this year. So I won't pick those. I'm actually going to say wide receiver. I mean, no shame if they draft a wide receiver. I think there's like five projected to go in the top 16 this year. Maybe that's where the talent is. Maybe that's where their highest grade is. But it's the one position where I think they already have young talent. It's like every other position on this team, I think they need a young player in the mix. And wide receiver is the one position that has young talent. So I wouldn't blame them, but that would just be overstocking young riches, along with Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed. I want them to get younger at defensive end, defensive tackle, linebacker, safety, corner if they're not going to have Marshawn Lattimore, definitely the offensive line, definitely tight end, and quarterback, we've talked about a million times. So receiver is the one place where, like, I feel comfortable with their young talent at receiver.
I don't think wide receiver would shock me, and I'd be okay with it. I mean, the only one – the spot I think they should be open to it, but I don't think they will be, so I would be surprised if they actually took one. Quarterback's the one spot where I would be surprised, just because I feel like their philosophy is so all in on Derek Carr. So if they took one, I'd be like, wow, like I'd be surprised by it now. But I guess, I mean, if it's anything other than a pass rusher or an OT, and we're sitting here right now where nothing has been done at those, I think anything other than that would surprise me a little bit. But if wide receiver is the best one, you could justify But I guess if we're running through it, I mean, tight end makes more sense to me before wide receiver if, like, Bowers is still available.
Best tight end in the galaxy. Oh, wait, that's Matt Bowers. I'm getting
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're forced to pick one, like, wide receiver, quarterback are probably the two where it'd be like, okay, yeah, a little bit. Like, it just feels like they aren't going to do one, and then the other one, it feels like they're most well set at that position. So I don't disagree with you, but I just wouldn't be – just, like, within the very rigid – definition of like surprise. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
And
by that.
And look, just looking at this year's draft class, you could say guard or safety because I'm not seeing a lot of guards and safeties projected to go in the top 14. But as far as position need, those are positions that need to be restocked, though, for sure.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Is the Saints linebacker depth a concern with Pete Werner and DeMario Davis entering the final years of their contract? Yes.
Yes.
If so, should they look to address it by signing a free agent or through the draft?
I mean, probably draft, because if you sign a free agent, you can't pay a free agent a lot of money because there's no spot for him. Like, you're not going to pay a lot of money and then tell the guy, but you don't get to play this year because we have DeMario Davis and Pete Werner and we only use two linebackers at a time. So it makes a lot more sense to either be a a young backup who's being groomed for a bigger role, or, you know, the outside linebacker pass rusher who is something they're going to look more into using what they've done with Zach Bond, Caden Ellard to a certain extent. So if they add that guy and you call him a linebacker, but he's edge rushing half the time, they could certainly look for that in either spot, I think.
Yeah, I think that they need a Mike or a Will. Just get him in the pipeline for sure. And if you can draft one, I'd draft him. I mean, yeah. And get him in the mix and start kind of rotating them in a little bit. I think both these guys probably end up sticking around, though, so I don't know if it's, like, an immediate concern. But, yeah, I think it's something that you should start trying to develop. There's no point in waiting on it, really. And if he ends up, competing, even better. So, all right, that's all we got for you guys. We're going to be back Monday from our studio, and then we're going to be in the combine all week. There'll be a lot of stuff coming up with the Saints. Start hearing the rumors, start hearing about some of the guys they might be trying to keep, trying to get rid of, whatever. So make sure you're signed up to our website. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment, and we'll see you next time.